All right, the minute hand has crossed 12. Another work week has rolled to an end. Friday.
Triple happy hour.
That's right, 5 p.m. on Friday. What else could it be but triple happy hour? Time for American Hit Radio. And 90.3 WHBC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales. Ryan here as well for the next hour. What we've been doing for the past few weeks now in our How Music Changed series is a specific set of shows that we're calling Transistor Days. We're covering a bunch of songs that started, the series starts in January of 1955, and it's going to roll on through to the 60s. So we'll be doing this for a while. This is show number 12 in that series. And with this show, we are up to the spring of the year 1959. Now, if you've been following us through the series with what we've done so far from 55 up until now, I think it's rather interesting just to see how music is changing already. You can literally like feel the changes, not only from year to year, but sometimes from season to season. There's a lot that's going on and that is developing. For example, like if you were following us from the beginning, but you might notice that by 1959, the rock and roll audience grew wise to the establishment ruse of the lame copycat artists releasing inferior versions of original rock and roll and R&B hits. The material that was originally released by black artists being replaced by the white copycat artists. Pat Boone and his ilk were starting to wane in popularity at this point in time, while at the same time, real R&B took off so strongly that it competed with rock and roll for chart domination. Indeed, a lot of people would be referring to the R&B hits as rock and roll as though it were the same thing, and it might as well be because they had the same basic audience. Now, almost every one of these R&B artists were on small independent labels, so the other labels needed a new ruse, and in time they came up with a plan to invent their own rock and roll stars. That's a new business idea.
What a phenomenon.
Right. They'd find young kids with who they considered to have enough star appeal who were willing to follow orders and maybe learn how to sing. Maybe. It worked for a while, too. But even that plan was quickly overwhelmed. And that's where we are as we start this show. Now, being as we are in, where are we? March of 1959. This is just 1 month after February 3rd, 1959, the day the music died. We played Ritchie Valens last week. We played his hit La Bamba, which was on the charts when that plane crashed. And this song, released by Buddy Holly, was actually a posthumous hit. He was dead when it came out, unfortunately. The song, I never knew this, was written by Paul Anka. And it was one of the first Buddy Holly hits to have orchestration on it, orchestrated by a guy named Dick Jacobs. We might hear his name later on in the show. But this was a hit, number 13 hit on Billboard's Top 40 in 1959. As I said, a posthumous hit after he sadly passed away, was killed in that plane crash. The song is titled It Doesn't Matter Anymore on 90.3 WHPC.
There you go, baby, here am I. Oh, well, you left me here so I could sit and cry. Well, golly gee, what have you done to me? Oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter anymore. Do you remember, baby, last September, how you held me tight each and every night? Well, whoops-a-daisy, how you drove me crazy, but I guess it doesn't matter anymore. There's no use in me a-crying. I've done everything and now I'm sick of trying. I've thrown away my nights and wasted all my days over you. Well, you go your way and I'll go mine. Now and forever till the end of time, I'll find somebody new. Baby, we'll say we're through and you won't matter anymore. There's no use in me a crying. I've done everything and now I'm sick of trying. I've thrown away my nights and wasted all my days over you. Well, you go your way and I'll go mine. Now and forever till the end of time, I'll find somebody new, and baby, we'll say we're through, and you won't matter anymore. You won't matter anymore.
The song that was released by Buddy Holly after the plane crash that took his life, written by Paul Anka. It's worth noting, I think, that Paul Anka was quite gentlemanly in how he handled this. He donated his composer's royalty to Buddy Holly's widow in its entirety. And I think that was a very generous and gentlemanly thing for him to do.
Very much so.
All right. Next track. Taking us back to New Orleans. Every time we get to New Orleans, there's a lot that I want to talk about, especially from this era. Now, New Orleans musicians knew something better than anybody else anywhere. Rock and roll was not simply melding R&B to country. It had to be youthful, lively, fun. The blues were intense and appealed to an older crowd, but rock and roll was meant for the teenagers. In New Orleans, songs became rock and roll simply by making the subject matter less serious. Now, Huey Piano Smith, we covered him a little bit earlier with a song called Don't You Just Know It, was a chief arranger at Cosmo Matassa's J&M Studios. And he saw quite a few characters pass through the doors of that place, including people like Clarence Frogman Henry and Little Richard. Talk about characters. Guitarist Slim, the guy who recorded The Things I Used to Do, was an early partner of Smith, who often dyed his hair outrageous colors to match his equally outrageous clothing. This is 1959. In 1957, a cross-dressing vocalist named Barbie Marchand became the lead vocalist for Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns. Together, they had one top 40 hit in 1958 with Don't You Just Know It. Like I said, we played that earlier in this series. But Smith got tired of traveling and performing live. So the band continued to perform with a replacement, while Smith dedicated most of his energy to songwriting and studio sessions. He knew firsthand that humorous material was money in the bank, so he continued to write in that style, which was the best thing that could have happened to a kid named Frankie Ford. Ford was an Italian kid. His real name was Frank Guzzo, who the local impresarios thought could compete with Elvis. They had recently attempted a similar experiment with a kid named Jimmy Clanton, and he had a number 4 hit with a song called Just a Dream. Ace Records chief Johnny Vincent heard Ford and brought him to J&M Studios, although he had no material for him. Huey Piano Smith had written a song called Sea Cruise, and he wanted to keep it for himself. But Vincent somehow finagled it from him. He took the recording by Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns, erased Smith's vocal, and dubbed Frankie Ford over it. Ford had a good voice for rock and roll, and he sang the song well, but the foghorns, the bells, the rockin' beat, and the infectious New Orleans rhythm virtually guaranteed the song hit status. Sea Cruise is fun from beginning to end, and Frankie Ford sings it for all he's worth. Pure Crescent City lunacy. Hooey, baby. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Here's Sea Cruise.
Won't you let me take you on a sea cruise? Ooh-wee, ooh-wee. me, please. I don't like begging, but now I'm on bended knee. I got to get to rock and get my hat off the rack. I got to boogie woogie like a knife in the back. So be my guest, you've got nothing to lose. Won't you let me take you on a sea cruise?
Sounds great. Incredible. Frankie Ford with Sea Cruise. You listen to that piano that's going on in the background there with all hitting like almost completely nothing but upbeats. And you can say, well, there it is. There's ska. That was, you know, that song was getting a lot of airplay in New Orleans. And at night, that frequency would drift to Jamaica. And it ended up that anybody who was there at the birth of ska says that they got all their rhythms because they listened to them coming from American radio.
USAA insurance for busy veterans.
And it was songs like that that did it.
Her car got hit.
All right, so up next, since we're talking about this R&B rock and roll thing, a song called Kansas City, originally written by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller all the way back in 1952. These guys are big heroes of the rock and roll story. They keep coming up all over the place. They had never been to Kansas City. They just wrote the song because they were fans of Big Joe Turner. So they thought they'd write a song that would be cool because they were fans of Big Joe Turner. So they write the song, and it ended up becoming one of the most recorded songs that they had ever written. There's more than 300 versions of this song that have appeared on the pop charts or on the R&B charts. Imagine that, 300 versions that charted of this song, right? Incredible. I mean, to make my point, the hit version that I'm going to play was recorded by a guy named Wilbert Harrison, and his version went to number one. Just hit the charts in April of 1959, but what he couldn't have known when he was doing this was that Little Richard had recorded the song about 3 or 4 years earlier, dating back to about 1955, and he had it, like, sitting on the shelf, and it didn't come out until Little Richard released his an album and used it as an album track that came out like way late in 1958 and was released as a single at the same time as Wilbert Harrison.
Wow.
Now, what's further funny is like Wilbert Harrison's version, which is, now we're talking about beating Little Richard soundly at his own game. Little Richard's version only went to number 95 on the pop charts in America. Wilbert Harrison destroyed him. It went to number one with his version. But the tables turned in the UK because Little Richard's version was a hit in England. And that's the version that the Beatles were listening to. So when the Beatles did their version of Kansas City, Hey, 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 that was them covering Little Richard's version of the song. So full circle. An American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Here's Wilbert Harrison performing the number one hit version of Kansas City.
Going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there and
I might take the plane, but if I have to walk, I'm going just the same. Going to Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one. Ah, oh, but you know, yeah, mustache. Gotta find a brand new baby. That's the reason why I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one.
Million seller for Wilbert Harrison, the hit version.
I wonder if history would have been different if the Beatles had heard this one.
Yeah, I think it would have been. I mean, I don't know if the Beatles would have recorded it. Certainly not the way that they did, with Paul McCartney doing his, Paul McCartney does a mean Little Richard.
Yes, he does.
So maybe they just would have considered the song to be something that they didn't really have a reason to cover, because it wouldn't have suited either of the vocalists, neither Paul nor John. Now, Wilbert Harrison did have another hit in about 1970, a minor hit. It was called Let's Work Together. But what that was actually a rework of a song that he recorded just a couple of years after he recorded Kansas City, a song called Let's Stick Together. And some of you, if you're fans of Roxy Music, might know the version by Brian Ferry. That was him lifting that song from Wilbert Harrison. So there you go. All right, we were talking about copycat artists and them fading out and then stars being invented. That's where we're at now. I want to play what I would consider to be a quote-unquote great miss. The artist is named Fabian Forte, or just Fabian for short. That's how he was known. He had 11 songs that reached the Billboard Hot 100 from about this point going forward. And he was from Philadelphia, which was a great place to be from in the late 50s, because this is where Dick Clark was doing American Bandstand.
Yes, so indeed.
There was a lot of local kids who got to be famous because they just happened to be near where American Bandstand was happening. Now, it's an interesting story that I could tell you about Fabian, because it kind of makes me a lot more sympathetic to him, much more sympathetic to him than I otherwise might have been. It turns out that there were these two guys who were looking around South Philadelphia trying to find some teenage kids that looked really great. They figured they could groom them into, exactly like I said, make them into rock stars. They didn't worry about anything but how they looked.
Wow.
Now, one day, Fabian, his father had a heart attack. And the ambulance comes and they take his father away, and Fabian is outside, you know, dealing with the emergency. And these two guys, Bob Marcucci and Peter DeAngelis, see him. And Fabian says, they kept staring at me. And at the time I had a crew cut, but this was, you know, the days of Rick Nelson and Elvis. So anyway, he comes up to me and he says, if you're ever interested in the rock and roll business, and he hands me his card. And I'm looking at him like he's out of his mind. I told him, leave me alone. My dad just had a heart attack. You know. So anyway, Fabian's father comes back from the hospital, but he's not able to work. So Fabian realizes that he needs a job. So he makes the phone call. And they come on down. He agrees to record a single. Frankie Avalon knew him and suggested that he would be a good choice. Now, you know, here's Frankie Avalon, the exact same thing, his predecessor in this star creation business. Mm-hmm. So Fabian just went, and he said he had the right look, and he was given a bunch of songs, and Fabian just said, he goes, it was horrible. he goes, the songs were horrible. There was a song called Shivers. It was a local hit. And then he ended up going on Dick Clark's TV show, And Dick Clark said that he did nothing but just stand there. He just stood there, and all the girls went wild, started screaming and yelling for him. And he didn't do anything. Clark said, I never saw anything like this. Now all you have to do is teach him to sing. It's totally insane. So what eventually happens is exactly that. And then he starts getting good material. This song, written by Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann, two of the best songwriters in rock and roll history, submit this song. Fabian sings it, and it becomes a huge hit for him. It goes all the way up to the top 10, stopping at number 9 on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Don't listen too close to his pitch, folks, but here's Fabian singing Turn Me Loose.
Turn me loose, turn me loose, I say. This is the first time I ever felt this way. Gonna get a thousand kicks or kiss a thousand chicks, so turn me loose. Myself right out, so turn me loose,
turn me loose.
Ooh, I got some change in my pocket and I'm preparing to go, taking some chick or two to the picture show. And when I see you home and we kiss goodnight,
Fabian. Still didn't quite learn how to sing yet, as you can tell, but he hangs in there at least.
Yes.
One of my choices for a great miss from this era, though, because of what it represents, really, but still a tip of the hat to him for doing the right thing for his family. All right. We played this artist just last week. Jackie Wilson had one of his first top 40 hits in late 1958, and here he is back in it's April of 1959. He follows up with yet another song written by Berry Gordy Jr. Yes, that Berry Gordy Jr. and his manager, Tyran Carlo. Jackie Wilson sings the song and ends up with another top 20 hit, actually number 13 on 90.3 WHPC. Oh, by the way, this song is also, the strings on it are also arranged by Dick Jacobs. I told you that when we played the Buddy Holly song, that was the first time that a Buddy Holly song came out with string arrangements on it. It might have indicated a change in direction for Buddy Holly, but that was Dick Jacobs, and this is Dick Jacobs as well doing the strings on That Is Why I Love You So.
That is why I love you so.
Don't you know, baby? That's why I love you so.
Yeah. turn her back over, flip. That is why.
That's why I love you so.
Don't you know, baby?
That's why I love you so.
That is why.
That's why I love you so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want the world to know. Turn her back over, flip. That is why.
That's why I love you so.
That is why.
That's why I love you so.
Come on now, baby.
That's why I love you so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to take it easy, baby.
That's why I love you so.
Take it easy, honey.
That's why I love you so.
Don't you know now.
That's why I love you so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want the one more time now.
Telling you, man. I mean, Jackie Wilson is such an amazing piece of work and so much talent. And again, it's another track that I bemoan the backing vocals. They just sound a little bit
sound too hokey for you.
Yeah, a bit almost operatic, the way that
they offer a great contrast to his voice.
Well, they make him sound that much better, right? I agree with that. Now, one artist that has been with us from the very beginning of this series, and still at the top of his game 4 years in, is Chuck Berry. Like I said, the guy was a triple threat. He did everything. He was writing his own songs, playing guitar. He was the lead vocalist. And he pretty much did the best job of almost any of the songwriters as representing the youth. You know, he was not a young guy, but he got how kids thought. And was he good at cashing in on doing that. And it's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. Because these were anthems, rock and roll anthems. Perfect example. Here it is now. Still April of 1959. And he puts out a single with two A-sides. A double A-side. In 59, that was actually pretty rare. Huh. Not very common. On one side of the record is Little Queenie, about a teenage, hot girl. And on the other side is a song called Almost Grown. Perfect for the youth market, for rock and roll. And his words are so clever. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's Chuck Berry.
Whoa, whoa.
You know I'm almost grown.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah, and I'm doing all right in school.
Nah,
they ain't said I broke no rules.
Nah,
I ain't never been in Dutch.
Nah,
I don't browse around too much. Don't bother me, leave me alone. Anyway, I'm almost grown. I don't run around with no mob. Got myself a little job. I'm gonna buy me a little car. Drive my girl in the park. Don't bother, sleep us alone. Anyway, we almost grown.
Da 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 da.
see, rock and roll's still alive and well in 1959. R&B's catching up, though, as you can see with all the things that are around it, but that's pretty awesome. Another interesting fact is that country music was also, around this time, more or less considered to be rock and roll. Anything that wasn't mainstream was getting sort of lumped together, all the stuff that was independent labels. And but in this instance, it's not an independent label. This Johnny Horton, the artist I'm about to play, was on Columbia Records, the biggest of the big. And they just got lucky, I think, getting Johnny Horton, because he ended up with some of the bigger country hits of this period. Quite a number. Now, the biggest hit that Johnny Horton ever released was called The Battle of New Orleans, and it's got a funny story. It was written by a guy named Jimmy Driftwood. Jimmy Driftwood was a school principal from Arkansas, and he was a teacher, and what he wanted to do was get his students to understand some of the facts that had taken place during the Battle of New Orleans. So there was a fiddle tune, and the type of thing that was around ever since, like, the time of the Battle of New Orleans. It was called the 8th of January. It was a song that basically was, because that was the date of the Battle of New Orleans. So this school principal took that tune, that fiddle tune, and he wrote words to it in an attempt to get students interested in learning history.
Very cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So then it's out and it's about, and then Johnny Horton basically decides that he's going to do a version of it and ends up with a national number one hit, the biggest country hit of the decade. On American Radio 90.3 WHBC, here's Johnny Horton singing The Battle of New Orleans.
We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down the river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise if we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we seen their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. Well, down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down, so we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind, and when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
You know, I never told you this, Heidi, but every time I hear that song, I think of my mom. As a kid growing up, my mother loved that record. And I never heard her say anything at all about the quote-unquote, the day the music died, with Big Bopper and Buddy Holly losing their lives. But she really seemed to be a fan of Johnny Horton. And he died in November of 1960 in a really horrible car wreck. He and the band were driving from Austin to Shreveport, and they were going over a bridge, and they collided head-on with an oncoming truck.
Oh, no.
And Johnny Horton was killed. And the rest of the band had some serious injuries, a leg amputation and head injuries and such. But I remember my mom always, like, basically, you know, bemoaning the loss of Johnny Horton. And I think it was because she was such a huge fan of that song. So there you go, Mom. That's for you. All right. I think this is the first time we're playing a song by the Drifters, although they've been around for a while. The reason for that is that the Drifters, up until this point in time, were an R&B act who had hits on the R&B charts, but not the rock and roll charts. Easily the least stable of all the great vocal groups, they also happened to have the most longevity. They were low paid, so they kept quitting. And the guy who was in charge of the band, George Treadwell, kept replacing them with different people. If you add them up, there were more than 60 members of the Drifters drifting through. 60 different singers.
Wow.
In the band. The first group was Clyde McFadder and the Drifters. They had, like I said, that was the version that had all the R&B hits. But by 1959, a new singer comes along, Benny King, and he comes in and replaces whoever was there before him, who knows, and he basically brings the band back, and they do it with a song that they thought was a total mess. It was called There Goes My Baby. It's on Atlantic Records, and Benny King is great, but they are now beginning, they're doing this kitchen sink thing where they're bringing in strings and horns, and they got the Bayonne beat going and everything else. And they were, I don't think that anybody thought that they had a significantly decent, coherent song. It ended up becoming huge. There Goes My Baby stopped at number two, reaching the charts in June of 1959. So, on American Radio 90.3, WHBC, here's Benny King and the Drifters with There Goes My Baby. Start of a whole new set of Drifters with that song, There Goes My Baby. And also a significant change in music and styling, because that was a new thing for R&B, what was happening on that track right there. All right. Well, a couple more great misses. This is the Fabian era, so let's get to it. He had his most successful single just 2 months after Turn Me Loose in June 59. A guy named Ollie Jones wrote a song called Tiger, and it went to number 3 for Fabian. This song even made it onto the R&B charts, if you can imagine that. So here on 90.3 WHBC is Fabian once again performing Tiger.
Hey, lump of sugar, you look kind of sweet. Cuter than a baby walking down the street. When I look into your eyes, I want to leave. I can't conceal that you make me feel like a tiger. Really drives me. I wanna growl. Wow. I'm feeling stronger than a grizzly bear. Soaring like an eagle flying through the air. When I get you in my arms, you better beware. I go insane cause I can't be tame like a tiger. And you're my mate. Hurry up, buttercup, and don't be late. I might get mad if I have to wait. Come right now, cause I'm on the prowl like a tiger.
Fabian doing a, I guess you could say, a fairly abysmal imitation of Elvis Presley.
Yeah, his singing didn't get much better, did it?
No. But you know what? He might not have been a good singer, but you know, knowing what I know about him from doing the research, I respect him a lot as a person.
He was a good guy.
He got involved in this basically to help his family because his father had a heart attack, and he was working to help bring money in for the family. And he was shamed by all of this. I mean, it was not an easy thing for him. He knew that he wasn't good.
Aww.
I mean, during the payola scandal, he was forced to testify before Congress to admit that his recordings had been doctored electronically to, quote, significantly improve his voice.
Aww.
I mean, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And it's not even like that's the improvement.
How much improvement did they have the technology to do back then?
Right. I mean, it's not like they had, you know, pitch control. Like,
I mean, if they'd have gotten someone else to sing the song.
it's such a shame. You know, his music career was over by the time he was 18, if you can imagine that. He bought out his contract and it cost him $65,000 to get out of his contract. He said, I felt controlled. I felt like a puppet. It was a frightening 3-year nightmare.
Wow.
That's a shame. So
hopefully he made that much to be able to cover that.
Right. I take back all my negative thoughts about him as a person, though, because I got nothing but respect for the man, knowing all that. One more great miss. Somebody else who I have respect for, but her music drives me absolutely nuts, is Connie Francis. It was just a couple shows back. We played Stupid Cupid,
the
song which I said is, you know, the song is as stupid as the title implies. And she needed to follow it up, and this is the song that came as close to giving her a hit as Stupid Cupid, because this song became a top 5 hit, number 5, after charting in June of 1959. The song was originally supposed to be a B-side. There was another Neil Sedaka, Howard Greenfield song that they called Frankie, and it was all about Frankie Avalon. It was meant to cash in on this whole Fabian Frankie Avalon thing that was happening around this point in time. All the sweater boys, you know, the pop teen artists.
The heartthrobs.
Yeah. But, you know, Connie Francis was looking for another song that would be cute, something that would set her apart from the boys, because there were not really any rock and roll girl singers up until now. I mean, there haven't been any yet up until this point. So Connie Francis was it. So she was trying to find songs that you would call cute, I would call stupid, but it became a hit. So what do I know?
Maybe you're stupid.
Right. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, make up your own mind. Here's Connie Francis performing Lipstick on Your Collar. Well, is the jury still out?
She's a good police detective.
Oh, she's been taking lessons from you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I took lessons from her.
Yeah, that makes more sense, actually, doesn't it? Of course, yeah, one of the dumber songs from the era, but, you know, one of my choices for a great miss from the spring of 1959. All right. Dinah Washington. She was called the Queen of the Blues. But I always thought that was something of a misnomer. I mean, yeah, she was a great blues singer, but she was talented enough, in my book, to sing almost anything and make it sound fresh. I think it would be more appropriate to consider her the spiritual link that connects Billie Holiday and Aretha Franklin.
Ah.
Ballads, R&B, as well as the blues, were standard fare for Billie Holiday and Aretha. And each of them dominated the music scene for at least a decade, with Dinah Washington in that decade in between them. Now, she may not have had the same impact commercially or musically, but to me, her talent was certainly comparable. And she was one of my favorite singers when I was a little baby boy. I still get this thing whenever I hear Dinah Washington. Just always got to me from the age of 2 until the age of not quite 62. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's Dinah Washington singing What a Difference a Day Makes.
What a difference a day made 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers, where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine, Lord, what a difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made, and the difference is you.
That's one of those songs that just constantly appeared when I was a baby, and I would just hear it. And it sinks in, you know, things like that just sink in and you can't let them go. There's a lot of people that basically decry Dinah Washington as a blues artist who gave in to the pop market. And I'm sorry, I just don't hear. I think that that song is just too beautiful to complain. Yeah. All right, I think we got time for one more. Let's take our time on this one, because I got an interesting track. It just missed the top 10. It stopped at number 11. It's a doo-wop band. Now, let's just think about this. Names of doo-wop bands that are birds. The Ravens, the Jayhawks, the Orioles, the Penguins, the Robins, the Cardinals, the Falcons, and now the Flamingos. Doo-woppers loved bird names for their groups. But in my opinion, the Flamingos were among the best. Their harmonies were literally note perfect. And they were also one of very few vocal groups that actually also played their own instruments. The song that they had a hit with, I Only Have Eyes For You, dated back to 1934. It was the last big hit for a band leader named Ben Selvin. You might have heard that in our previous series when we were covering the earlier days of AM. And he was on the charts more than 100 times in the early third of the century. But in the hands of the Flamingos, they take the same song and it sounds like mood music from Mars, which kind of suits the lyrics. Because if you are so lost in love that you don't know whether you're in a garden or on a crowded avenue, then you're pretty far out there. They made their song sound ethereal. And the Flamingos took doo-wop so far that by the time they got to where they were going, it was barely even recognizable as doo-wop. Just a beautiful song. On American Radio, 90.3 WHBC, we leave you with the Flamingos performing I Only Have Eyes For You.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. I only am asked for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky. I only am eyes for you. I don't know if we're in a garden. Maybe millions of people go by.